Good morning. 10:31 a.m. Sunday, March the 11th, 2018. It's gorgeous. It's cold. It is cold. It's 34, 36, somewhere in the mid-30s here. The sun is quite warm when you're in the sun, but if you're not, yeah, it's a little bit nippy. Sky King going overhead here. I got something over 3,000 words yesterday. I'm already 1,000 words in for today, and we're talking about home run. Well, some of you are doing the beta read for Suicide Run. I still get a lot of typo reports, which are welcome but not necessary. A couple continuity errors where somebody uses the wrong ship name or something. I had a certain amount of variability in names spelling. Names being spelled, whatever. I think I've got most of those taken care of. I think I've got most of the italics issues dried up. I'm cautiously optimistic here. That I'll be able to take the next step, get this thing moving along. So far, I haven't had any plot issues that have repeated. Generally, I don't worry about plot issues unless they're tagging something I already suspect is a problem, or unless more than a couple of people underline for me. It's like, now, out of 30 people, if 3 think this is a problem, okay, I'll look at it. Or if a problem comes in that sort of triggers an aha in the back of my brain, of course, I will look at those. But there are, I've got a couple where the answer is actually on the page. It's there, and maybe I need to put a little underscore under it or something. Bold it or highlight it in red. Frequently the questions are answered by the next paragraph or the next chapter. I did get an interesting management conundrum. I'm not sure how or if or how, really, I would deal with it. I need to think about that a little bit more, I think. In the meantime, I've got Home Run chugging along. I started writing yesterday. I wrote some more this morning. I met my goal of 2 bullet points yesterday. It was only 3,200 words, but I got the 2 bullet point covered, and while that's going to be a bit short, if I maintain that ratio of words per bullet point, I'm not going to sweat it. 40 times 1.5, that would be, so 1,500 words per chapter. 40 chapters, What is that? 1.5 times 40 is 60. So that'd be 60,000 words, assuming that the chapters stay around 1,500 words, assuming that I only do 40 chapters, which is not a given. Not a given at all. The actual text of the first bullet point, it turned into two chapters, so that was actually a little bit longer in terms of the amount of story I wanted to tell versus word count. And there's, you know, there's, the reality is this technique allows for, even sort of requires, a certain amount of flexibility in the way the story gets unfolded. Because before I start to write it, all I have is a sketch. And as I begin filling in details, that sketch becomes much richer. But the fact that I start with a sketch means I'm not trying to go from a blank canvas to a full painting in a single step. And I think that's, I hope, geez, I hope that's going to help. The proof will be in, as they say, the pudding. And whether I can actually get Home Run drafted out and ready for betas by the time Suicide Run hits the shelves. Suicide Run is still at least 4 weeks out. So mid-April at the very earliest. April, more likely end of April, before it hits the shelves. Just because I have to give Karen Conlon and a couple other people who have to get involved, I have to give them time to do their work. I have to give them a chance to deal with the book, to make it as good as I can make it. I'm getting a little bit tired of the criticism that, oh, well, he got tired of the story, so he just chopped it off. I'm getting a little bit tired of that. And generally it's from people that I would have thought understood my books a little bit better, but maybe they aren't. Maybe it's just rando people who keep saying it over and over again for every single book, not understanding my philosophy of when the story is over, the book ends. And the denouement, maybe I like to think I'm getting better with the denouement. Maybe I'm not. The end of Fire was, is still puzzling me. I still do not understand what the meeting with Brill after the book ends has anything to do with the story that just ended. I get that people want to know the inside scoop of what happened at Telluride. I get that. The problem is that it's not significant to the story. And so I wind up with the same problem I have with the missing recording from Doubleshare, where Ishmael inadvertently records the captain's cabin after he's left Rosset and Burnside. I wrote the script for it, and I thought, well, maybe I'll produce it in audio, or maybe I'll publish a script or anything like that. And it's kind of dumb. It's kind of dumb. Because really, Rosset and Burnside make a couple of minor comments. Well, I think that went well. Yes, sir, it did. Or, yes, Captain, it did, I guess is more accurate. And then there's the sound of keyboards as a door closes and Rosset's voice kind of making, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Along with the keyboard tapping. Occasionally he chuckles. That's it. It's all song. It's all there. It's not significant. It didn't seem worth spending story time on. It's all there. There's nothing there. There is nothing on the recording. And of course Ishmael didn't listen to it, so he doesn't know that. And since he doesn't know that, you don't know that. And I guess since you don't know that, you have no way of understanding that, no, it's on the tape, doesn't really, it's on the recording, doesn't really matter. So from that perspective, I guess I can see it, sorta. So I guess I know what happened on Telluride, and it's completely from Brill's standpoint, I said Beverly, didn't I? I said Brill's standpoint. It's largely a non-event until Ishmael shows up. Because Brill knows that the system's defenses are hot and active. But they have no effect on her whatsoever because she's so engaged in her work. Her family is with her. It's like, some person in Peoria. Get ready, sit with me. Monk post. Isn't going to have a lot of incentive to leave Peoria. You know, they got a good job, they got a job they like, they have a family established. Why would they leave? Why would they move? Why would they go? Yeah, communication is a little tough. But that part has always been there. That part was there from the beginning. That part was there all along. So the meeting between Brill and Ishmael and Pip, Brill's husband, is a non-event. It's not significant. And I guess no amount of my telling you off the page that it's not significant is going to matter. So I will have to address it. No, you will not get to sit on the mess in on that. I'm taking my gloves off. You won't get to sit on, I'm not going to start the next book with that meeting. That would make that ending a cliffhanger. And it was never intended to be a cliffhanger. I know a lot of people think it's a cliffhanger. I don't. It isn't. I have a very different definition of what a cliffhanger is. That isn't it. So I will have Pip and Ishmael talk about it on their way out of the system. But you're not going to get to meet Brill again. You're not going to meet her husband. You're not going to. I'm not going to throw a chapter in to add detail that is not significant to the storyline of either book. All the information you need is already on the page in terms of the story. Now, the fact that I think a lot of people want me to write or wanted a different story, I can't do much about that. That's not the story I was going to write. So yeah, there's some interesting dynamics going on between the story that I write and the story y'all read. And I appreciate that once I publish a story, it's no longer mine, but yours. I can accept that. And I can accept that the story you read is not necessarily the one I write. The one I wrote. That's the nature of the beast is that I can't really do anything about that. I could be more aware that pointless details to me are of vital interest to the reader. Whether I can make myself write pointless filler details, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, the books end when the story's over. It's just the way that works. It's just the way I build books. Books end when the story's over. And there's not a lot of shilly-shallying around afterwards. Denouement, I've used the denouement more than once to wrap up a couple of loose ends, just to give a little closure to the story, to close some loops. But no, I don't know how. I don't know if. It's an interesting conundrum. And part of it is that it's like the common words problem that I have with Podium. I can send them a list of common words, but my list of common words doesn't really coincide with, we'll say, Jeff Kafer's list of common words. Roubaix is a really common word in Down East circles. Well, I won't say common, but... I mean, Down East, we wouldn't know how to pronounce that California town, city, whatever it is, that's spelled L-A-J-O-L-L-A. For most people Down East, that would be La Jolla. Anybody on this side of the Mississippi, with perhaps a little more linguistic savvy, might realize that it's actually La Jolla. And they've heard of La Jolla, but they don't know how to spell it. So it's probably the same with Roubaix. Roubaix, because it's clearly French, it's like this big drugstore chain, or was, I don't know if it still exists anymore, but it's a big drugstore chain down in Maine, down east. Laverdia. And they've had that, I think they've had to change over time, because when I was growing up, I very clearly remember having to go down to Laverdia. And then after I got back from the Coast Guard, I went back to Portland. It was Laverdier. It's still spelled the same. It's still the same word, but it was fairly, very clearly given a much more Franco pronunciation. It was Laverdier. And that actually isn't uncommon. There is a relatively common French surname that, depending on who you're talking to, may be pronounced in the proper French pronunciation or with a more anglicized twist. There's several of them, actually. LaRue is one of them. In a lot of cases, LaRue has actually had its spelling changed to L-A, capital R-U-E, LaRue, when the original French is L apostrophe H, what is it, H-E-R-E-A-U-X, I think, LaRue. So, yeah, the common used words problems. Because what common words I have aren't necessarily the common words everybody has. And the problem is I can't really identify that. I can't really identify them because they seem perfectly normal to me. What kind of problem are you having with this one? I think it's the same with storytelling. It's like, it seems perfectly clear to me. It seems perfectly logical to me. But what is perfectly logical and perfectly clear to me is obviously not universally shared. And I don't know how to get around it, because it's sort of like me offering you air. Oh, would you like some air? I mean, under normal circumstances, there's plenty of air. Why would I offer you any? I mean, it's all around us. You're breathing it already. Why would I give you... Why would I offer it to you? I don't know. One guppy offering another guppy a glass of water. What? How does that work? The hell are you talking about? It's... Oh, I know. In Tomlinson's. What is it called? The Coelho medallion. He talks about the zebra problem. And that's... If most people hear the sound of hooves, they think horses, not zebras. And how that short circuits their thinking when it comes to problem solving. At any rate, I'm at the back gate. I hope you remember to spring ahead. I did. Oh, I took a lot of time on this walk too, 21:48. But tomorrow's another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.